to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 28, 2020. Rebels of the National Salvation Front are fighting with South Sudan People's Defense Forces in central Equatoria.
They went and attacked our base in Sonema, that is around Mbashir area, and also in Modiba, around Morobo.
And more children will miss vaccination this year because of COVID-19 restrictions.
In the context of COVID-19, where the already fragile health system might be overwhelmed, vaccinating children is more important than ever.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some local leaders and eyewitnesses say heavy fighting between government forces and the rebels of the National Salvation Front erupted in Kajukeji and Lanya counties of Central Equatoria State. Samuel Soba, the spokesperson for the National Salvation Front, says his group is fighting the SPLA-IO forces who are now part of the government of South Sudan. He says the fighting has displaced thousands of villages in Mukaya Payam of Lanya County. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
NAS spokesman Soba Samuel accuses government and SPLA-IO forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar of attacking NAS positions in a joint campaign in Kajukeji and Lenya counties over the weekend.
On 26, they went and attacked our base in Sonema, that is around Mbashir area, and also in Modiba, around Morobo, and in Kajukeji in Kala too. They also attacked our forces, and we responded to them, and especially the one of Kala, it was very disastrous to them, because they underestimated our force in Kala, and that was not good on their side. So these operations, it seems to be coordinated, because it all happened in the same time, yesterday.
Samuel says two NAS soldiers were killed and three others were wounded during the fighting. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lam Gabriel claims NAS forces were the aggressors.
We were attacked in Kiju by the forces of Thomas Rilo. They killed two SLIO soldiers and injured one person. Then our forces withdrew from Kiju and moved to Kala. On the 26th, they attacked us again in Kala, coming from Kiju. But then our forces were ready, so we were able to repulse them back to Kiju. They killed one soldier and injured three more.
Gabriel denies SPLA-IO forces carried out a joint operation against the NAS, insisting the SPLA-IO has been observing the ceasefire of hostilities agreement signed by leaders from the government and the SPLA-IO and the NAS. He says the latest string of attacks by the NAS are aimed at disrupting the training and unification of forces. Samuel claims government forces are adopting a scorched earth policy by forcing civilians to flee their homes in Mukaya Payam of Lenya County.
They came and attacked us in our own bases. And up to now, I cannot lie to you that they overran our base of Kiju, they are still in Kiju.
President Alemin Joseph says he was displaced from his village in Mukaya last week and fled to the Gezira area in Yei. Speaking in Arabic, Joseph says government forces stormed their villages in Mukaya and beat civilians.
Government forces went and failed to get the rebels, so they stormed our village in Kinda area of Mukaya, interrogating civilians, beating and knifing them using knives, saying we should tell them where Thomas Cirilo forces are, and that is why we all fled to Yei.
Thomas Cirilo is the leader of the rebel NAS forces. Joseph says even though there was no fighting in Mukaya, government forces looted villagers' property. Robert Isaiah Lomude, who represents Lenya South in the Central Equatorial State Legislative Assembly, says displaced villagers have been streaming into the area for the past 5 days.
They have come with the children, aged one and so on. All this time they have not received the food. That is the situation. It is not that easy. When they arrived from 21st, 22nd, 23rd and so on, all the NGOs in here have been flocking, coming down to meet them. We have concern was here, give them some blankets and preparedness.
Major General Lul Rai Kwong, a spokesman for the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, says he is yet to receive any information on the clashes from commanders on the ground. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Sudanese transitional government has instructed all state authorities to enforce strict preventive measures to stop the spread of COVID-19 in the country. The Sudanese information minister says 9 out of 18 states in Sudan have reported positive cases of COVID-19. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese health authorities reported 38 new infections on Monday in Khartoum State, bringing the total number of confirmed cases to 275 since the first case was reported 2 months ago. Health officials say Sudan has entered a stage of community transmission of COVID-19, which means authorities may not be able to trace the sources of the infection. Speaking in Arabic at a media briefing last night in Khartoum, Sudan's information minister and the government spokesperson Faisal Mohamed Saleh called on the state authorities to close their borders and suspend all travel between states to curb the spread of the disease.
Already half of the states in Sudan have reported positive cases, and this is very alarming. People should be very careful and apply more protective measures. We have seen some states becoming aware of the danger of this disease and closing their borders.
Saleh attributes the increase on the number of cases to a failure by some Sudanese people to take the protective measures seriously, such as the lockdown in the capital Khartoum. He says many Khartoum residents continue to walk around the streets and marketplaces and drive around the city as if there were no pandemic. Saleh says despite the ban on interstate travel, the government has received information that some drivers continue to smuggle people from Khartoum to other states, a clear violation of health directives. He says the government will set up more security checkpoints within Khartoum and along major roads leading from Khartoum to other states.
We need everyone to stay within their states so that we avoid spreading the disease to other states, which have not recorded any cases yet. We are happy that some states have closed their borders with other states, and health authorities are working day and night to raise awareness and to avoid putting their citizens at risk of contracting this disease.
Saleh is calling on all citizens to act responsibly and adhere to the health directives announced by the health authorities to curb the spread of the virus.
Everyone should work together with health authorities to raise awareness to fight this disease. We should all employ the positive behavior of social distancing, the use of masks and hand sanitizers as much as we can.
22 people, including one medical worker, have died from COVID-19 in Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Some residents of Juba Town say they are starving and want the government to give them food. South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs says the government will distribute some food to internally displaced persons and some residents of Juba Town. For VOA News, Ding Magot has more from Juba.
Some Juba residents say the government's move to shut down all non-essential businesses and shops has cost them their livelihoods, making it difficult to feed their families. 30-year-old teacher Jonas Pitia says he has been staying at home since the government closed all schools. Pitia, who worked at a private school, says his employer will only pay him when schools reopen. He is urging non-governmental organizations and other groups to distribute food aid to Juba residents.
You go from door to door to give something at least to help people, because some people are now down. They don't have something to do.
Like food.
They don't even have food because they have closed down the market. You know, even people have no salary.
Another resident who prefers to be identified only as Nunu declined to specify whether she works for the government or the private sector, but she says she has not been paid since last October. Nunu says she cannot feed her family and needs help from the government.
My message to the government is to see the way for food. If there is no food, let us be given the money so that we will control. My message to the government is to see the way for food. If there is no food, let us be given money so that we will control how to eat and how to see for our future. This is only what we need from the government.
Humanitarian and Disaster Management Minister Peter Mayen Majongdit says the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission will deliver food to certain locations within Juba. He says his ministry is working with other humanitarian organizations, including the World Food Program, traders and private organizations to distribute food to internally displaced persons and some residents. Mayen says the groups will coordinate airdrops in inaccessible areas and buy food from local farmers while maintaining social distance.
The centers that they have here in Juba, they do it in the IDPs. They've also been doing it in other areas where we actually call them the most vulnerable, where the most vulnerable population is. For instance, you have Mangatens, you have like Berdinga, and other parts within Juba, and also some other parts outside in Kwejo. They also started. And in some parts of Victoria here, they have also started. So they already, the BA states, so they already have their contacts, they know, based on their own assessment.
Gatwech Peter Kulang, Undersecretary at the Ministry, says up to about 6.5 million South Sudanese are expected to experience acute food insecurity due to COVID-19, but says the government won't be able to provide food to everyone.
We have about 6.5 million people who are expected to experience acute food insecurity in the mid of May up to July this year. This period, based on the reporting that available with us in the Ministry and the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, plus the additional numbers of about 2 million IDPs.
Kulang says the government is working with the Education Ministry and aid agencies to set up a school feeding program because most children have started begging on the streets, which he says leaves them vulnerable to contracting coronavirus. For VOA News, I'm Ding Magot in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the impact of COVID-19 on measles vaccination for children. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your most valuable possession?
My valuable possession right now will be my laptop, because I have a lot of confidential documents on it that are very dear to me and I can't afford to lose right now.
I think my smartphone that my dad bought for me. Yeah, I treasure it so much because it was so expensive and I was so happy.
Being in school means so much to me. Yes, I know I've not yet finished, but I'm struggling to reach there because I know it is important to me and it will be something good to me.
My most valuable possession is a photo I took with an important personality in the entertainment industry, and it's an important possession to me because anytime I look at it, it encourages me and inspires me to attain higher heights.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
Thank you. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In our Tuesday health segment, we look at vaccination for children. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says hundreds of thousands of children in South Sudan will miss out on the measles vaccination due to travel restrictions and social distancing guidelines put in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19 pandemic. South Sudan joined the rest of the world in commemorating the World Immunization Week, which started on April 24th. UNICEF's communication specialist in South Sudan says the country has cases of measles. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Helen Sambo, UNICEF communication specialist in South Sudan, says the country still battles measles outbreak with more than 4,000 cases this past year, including 43 deaths. Sambo says as South Sudan struggles with COVID-19 restrictions and treating patients, it is important to vaccinate children against 6 life-threatening diseases, including measles.
In the context of COVID-19, where the already fragile health system might be overwhelmed, vaccinating children is more important than ever. I think COVID-19 has shown us what a contagious disease without a vaccine can do to the world. Measles is extremely contagious, but we are lucky because we have an effective vaccine.
In South Sudan, Sambo says UNICEF has carried out vaccinations in over 70% of counties in the country during its first phase of the vaccination campaign, which began in early February. The first phase covered counties in Central Equatoria, Eastern Equatoria, Jingule State, Northern Bahar Ghazal, Western Bahar Ghazal, Unity, Warrap, and Upper Nile States. UNICEF has suspended the second phase of its nationwide vaccination campaign aimed at vaccinating 2.5 million children because of the pandemic. It was scheduled to begin early last month and cover the remaining counties in Central Equatoria, Jingule, Unity, and Warrap states. Sambo says UNICEF had to suspend the campaign. Like other African countries, South Sudan instituted preventive measures to curb the spread of COVID-19. But she says parents and caregivers can still take their children to the health facilities for immunization shots, and she is urging them to do so.
We can't sit and see more children dying under our watch in South Sudan from preventable diseases. Therefore, we must ensure they are protected also in the time of COVID.
Sambo says during the pandemic, UNICEF is supporting health centers and hospitals with infection prevention and conduct training and provide equipment to ensure safe continuation of health services, including immunization. UNICEF and other agencies are working with South Sudan Health Ministry to set up vaccination posts throughout the country, including areas where access to health services is poor. But Sambo says there are many areas of South Sudan where children are hard to reach. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Rights groups accuse some authoritarian governments of using the coronavirus pandemic as a pretext to further limit free expression. But in North African country of Algeria, the trend is partly going the other way. From Paris, Lisha Brand reports on the birth of a new radio station.
As brand names go, Radio Corona International, or RCI, is probably in a league of its own. Launched last month on Facebook and SoundCloud, it offers a mix of music, news, and commentary in Arabic and French. Founder Abdallah Ben Adouda says the idea came during an online get-together with friends.
So we were talking about music, we were like exchanging ideas, and I said, my God, this is something we can do instead of, you know, just streaming music. Let's create like a radio show.
Radio Corona's tone is light and cynical. Ben Adouda says it tries not to criticize the government directly while still addressing sensitive subjects.
Okay, we talk about dictator, we talk about freedom of speech, we talk about the people in jail, we criticize the action of the government in other ways.
On va l'écouter.
The recipe seems to be working. A growing audience of thousands now listens to Radio Corona's twice-weekly broadcasts, which mirror Algeria's twice-weekly anti-government street protests during pre-coronavirus days. The broadcasts are happening as rights groups accuse authorities of censoring some independent media and arresting several high-profile activists and journalists in recent weeks.
Depuis le déclenchement de la crise COVID-19 en Algérie,
Reporters Without Borders North Africa director Souheb Hayati ticks off a few of them, including RSF correspondent Khaled Drareni.
Radio Corona International est la réponse, je trouve que c'est la réponse appropriée à l'absurdité.
Hayati considers Radio Corona the perfect answer to what he calls the absurdity and arbitrariness of the Algerian regime. Founder Ben Aduda has had his own brush-ups with authorities. He fled his homeland in 2014 after being harassed for his reporting. He's now based in Rhode Island. He says Radio Corona is about more than COVID-19. It's also the voice of the Harak protest movement, although he may keep its moniker.
Radio Corona won't stop after the crisis. I think what we are living now with this virus, it's something we won't forget anymore, so why not? We keep the name.
Besides, he says, there are other political viruses to tackle once this pandemic is over. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
As American doctors fight one of the world's worst outbreaks of COVID-19, several are reflecting on what they wish they knew when they first began to fight the disease. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on lessons learned as the number of U.S. deaths continue to rise.
With the U.S. accounting for nearly one-third of global coronavirus cases, some doctors in the United States say they've learned a lot on the front lines of the battle against the disease. That includes a better understanding of how to help patients who come in with low oxygen, for example, says the medical director of the Mount Sinai Hospital Emergency Department.
What we saw early on is that as soon as somebody started to get, to 6 liters of oxygen on this nasal cannula, they just got worse and worse, and so we jumped to intubation. Now we're realizing that probably something in between for some patients, like putting them on that high flow oxygen or putting them on that BiPAP, may actually be okay for some. The other thing that we've learned is that actually you can prone people.
Proning is a method of lying patients on their belly that has been successful, explains another internist and critical care cardiologist at Columbia University Medical Center.
The theory is that the lungs are like a sponge, and if you lie on your back for a very long time, that gravity sort of pulls all the secretions and the fluid and mats down that part of the lung, and that by flipping people over, you free up that space in the front of the torso to allow the lungs to open and expand and give better oxygenation, and it works.
She also says hospitals ran short of key equipment, something hospitals in Italy, Spain, and other hotspots have also experienced.
We all wished for the sake of people that we had recognized that this was coming earlier, could have had things in place for hospitals to manage patients, probably could have prevented a lot of the mass amounts of people that came in all at once, had more PPE available so that people weren't without it.
Internist Dr. Andrew Goel says the most surprising has been how the virus affects the elderly.
What I did not recognize was the severity of illness that would be seen in patients who are older. Had we known that, we could have instituted more restrictive control measures to prevent exposure to that group, and also to get very early treatment for that group to try to prevent the complications.
For most people, the disease causes mild symptoms such as fever and cough. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia, and can lead to death. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. There's been heavy fighting for the past 2 days between government forces and National Salvation Front rebels in Kejukeji and Lenya counties of central Equatoria State. NAS spokesman Samuel Suba says the fighting has displaced thousands of villagers in Mukaya Payam of Lenya County. Samuel says two NAS soldiers were killed and three others were wounded during that fighting. SPLA-IO deputy military spokesman and the defense minister's press secretary, Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, says NAS forces killed two SPLA soldiers in Kiju. He says NAS fighters went on to attack again in Kala. Some Juba residents say they are starving and want the government to provide them with food. South Sudan's humanitarian affairs minister says the government, together with aid agencies, will distribute food to IDPs and some residents in parts of Juba, but he says the government cannot reach all South Sudanese who are food insecure. Some Juba residents say the government's directives to protect the public against COVID-19, including shutting down most businesses, means they cannot make money to feed their families. Jonas Pidia says his employer will only pay him when schools reopen, and he suggests that aid agencies go door to door to give families food. And finally, during this World Immunization Week, UNICEF says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese children will not get the measles vaccination because of the COVID-19 protective measures now in place around the country. UNICEF official Helene Sanbu says there were more than 4,000 cases of measles in South Sudan this past year, including 43 deaths. She says in a country like South Sudan, where the health system is fragile, it's especially important to vaccinate children against life-threatening diseases, including measles. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Pink Doll by Vivian. Listening to Vivian with the song Pink Doll. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.